Tide Water and Environment Committee will come to order. Good morning, everybody. We're rushing around trying to find amendments, so I'm sorry for a bit of a delay. Committee, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3924. And this is a bill that Representative Donna Nelson has sponsored. It deals with farm stands in EFU zones, and she has requested that it go to the Committee on Agriculture and Forestry because it's more appropriate for them. So, and we'll entertain a motion to do this.
So moved.
Representative King has moved House Bill 3924 to the committee, the House Committee on Agriculture and Forestry. Is there discussion?
Well, Chair, I guess I'm not quite sure how a land use bill is more appropriate in the Ag Committee.
I think it would be the last part, the farm stand part.
Madam Chair, I understand that, but and I also understand that the representative sits on that committee. So.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
With all due respect, you should move it.
Yeah. Other than that, I'll vote for moving it on down. One last thing for us to deal with.
Further discussion. Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Hatt? Is excuse.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative
McCrory? Is excuse.
Representative King.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative
Crow. Aye.
It's Cruz.
Cruz. Representative
Mona Sanderson. Is excused.
Representative Morgan.
Is excused.
Jeff
Hurley. Both sides. House Bill 3924 moves to the Committee on Agriculture. The House Committee. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3187. And this is a similar situation. This is Representative Greg Smith's bill for waste management. It deals with private activity bond proceeds. And they request that it go to the Committee on Revenue, School Funding and Tax Fairness Revenue.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 3187 be referred without recommendation to the Committee on School Funding Tax Fairness / Revenue.
It's here. It's good.
I know. I've been here a while.
Representative Cruz has moved House Bill 3187. to the Committee on School Funding and Tax Fairness / Revenue without recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Just a referral here to another committee.
Is excused.
Aye. Mm-hmm. Revenue.
Representative McCrory.
Excuse.
Representative King.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative
Mona
Sanderson.
Aye.
Representative Morgan.
Both sides. Motion carries. House Bill 3187 moves to the Committee on Revenue.
The meeting's a little off this Friday, okay?
That is my staff. What? Not be my staff.
Someone said.
We're still waiting on amendments to House Bill 2698. Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3945, and staff will read the introduction.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3945 provides that territory annexed to a city, a special district after the annexation of the city to the district, is included in district boundaries. It removes the territory from one special district that previously serviced territory if certain conditions apply. Thank you.
This morning we have Representative Gerard here today, and also joined by Burton Lee of the Special District, and Pinnacock?
Cook.
Excuse me.
But I will answer anything.
Hey, you. Willamette County Fire District number one.
Yes, ma'am.
Please.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Bill Gerard, District 53. This is House Bill 3945, and with that kind of a number, we're very appreciative to be here this morning. I'm going to let the fire chief of my district explain what this bill is all about, because Mr. Pennycook is very good at this. So,
Representative, that's not what you said about him last night.
Sadly, that is the truth. But Chair Close and representatives on the committee, it's my pleasure to be before you today. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the history. Back in 1991, in the Klamath Falls area, there was less than 50,000 population and four distinct fire departments operating there. And from our perspective, my perspective at least, that's simply not good government. In 1991, there were two new fire chiefs hired, and at that time we started discussing the merger of the fire departments. And merger of government had been discussed in Klamath Falls a number of times, never with any success. And as a matter of fact, the one time, the best that it ever did when it was on the ballot was being defeated 3-1. We were able to merge the two largest departments, which was the City of Klamath Falls and Fire District 1, in 1991. And from that time forward, we worked under a contractual agreement for 3 years. The reason we did that, we weren't going to be able to sell it to the public any other way than to actually show them we were more efficient and more effective. We never took the allowable 6% increase during that period of time, much to the chagrin of our union, I might add. But regardless, we didn't need it. We passed the savings along to the citizens. It saved them over $5 million in accumulated taxes up to this point. So it was a good thing. And when it actually got on the ballot in November of 1994, over 90% of the people who voted for it, which was very good from my perspective. But what was more important to me was it had the third lowest undervote of the entire election process, and that meant people cared, people were interested, and people knew what we were talking about. When that annexation occurred, we assumed, because of ORS 198-867, that all future annexations of the city would be an annexation also for the fire district. In other words, as the city grew, the district grew, because the people of the city, the people of the district, had voted that we should be their fire department. And as we did that, we found out that there were opposing views and conflicting legislation, which has led to some problems. Among those problems is a lawsuit against Klamath County Fire District Number 1, the City of Klamath Falls, and the Klamath County Communications District, who is the dispatch agency for all emergency service agencies in Klamath County. Because there's confusion or disagreement over the applicable statute, we believe there's a real possibility that this will throw hundreds, thousands of annexations throughout the state into question. Not only are there legal questions being raised, there are service implications. And one of the things that the law enforcement agencies in our area have done, they've predicated their patrol beats on our response areas. Law enforcement does that all the time. They follow the lead of the fire department. Mm-hmm. But there's not. I can be brave when there aren't a lot of law enforcement in here. But
right. But
regardless, it was a good thing. I mean, you know, why do the same kind of work twice? But the problem is now, with the way things are occurring in Klamath Falls, we've got the wrong police agency being dispatched to incidents that aren't even fire-related, let alone the ones that are fire-related. I'm not suggesting that there isn't law enforcement response, because there is. I'm just saying it causes confusion and causes problems because of that. There's consequences to other agencies, too, where people think that because they've been annexed to the city, they're going to receive services from Fire District 1. Something happens, they call us. Burn permits are a big issue in our part of the country because of the dry weather that we have and so forth. And that causes confusion to the citizens. It makes government look bad, and I don't like that. And I would hope we're going to find some way to be able to change that. And I think that, you know, basically with these problems, the problems to the agencies, the confusion, the lawsuit, and simply it doesn't look like government is doing the right thing, that this is a problem that's a statewide problem that needs to be resolved on a statewide basis, and that's why we're coming before you. I mentioned the lawsuit. Yes, there is a lawsuit. It's going before a judge. And we're going to have a limited period of time to try and educate that judge on what the issues are and have him understand what we're saying and have them, him, we know who the judge is, make the decision that's appropriate. Because of that, through Representative Girard, we came to you and we're looking for a solution because we do believe this is a statewide problem and chaos is what's going to result when people find out that there are these two conflicting statutes that not everybody was aware of previously. So thank you very much for your time.
Could you just tell us, David, just briefly, the two conflicting statutes, what is the language between the two and what is the conflict in statute?
Very basically, 189 or 198 says that when a district has annexed the city, all future annexations of the city shall become part of the district. ORS 220 says that two like districts cannot provide service to the same piece of property. And the way you avoid that is through an action called withdrawal. The city has the ability to withdraw, and in our case, the city of Klamath Falls has chosen not to do the withdrawal, the reason being, in my opinion, that the city has been under compression ever since ballot measure 5 was passed, and we obviously have a higher tax rate than what the other agency does. And on top of that, we have a mutual aid agreement as well as an automatic aid agreement, which means we're going to be there anyway. And so the citizens really don't see a lessening of services as a result of this.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Representative Monica.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still a little confused. Is this about annexing fire districts when you're talking about district, or is this talking about property tax and land being annexed? And if it's the former, I was wondering why this didn't go to government efficiency.
Madam Chair, Burton Weist with Special Districts Association. May I address that question? The issue affects all districts. It's not just a fire district. And it affects the annexations that have occurred for over 20 years under this particular statute. So we believe there has been, we don't know the number, but we'd estimate there are hundreds, if not thousands, of annexations that have occurred where districts provide the service, whether it's fire, water, sewer, or whatever it is, to a city, and that city has been annexed to a district. And when the district has been, or when the city's been doing their annexations, the districts have automatically gone with the city, because that's what the statute said. The other statute was intended, in our view, to make clear that you can't have two water districts taxing the same bunch of people for the same service. So the taxing issue comes in when you have that concern of two governmental units taxing the same people for the same service. That statute was designed to make clear that you can't have two water districts, two fire districts, two sewer districts taxing the same person. So the only taxation issue really, this really is not a taxation issue, it's actually a land use issue in terms of annexations. And what we have is we have the statute that we always followed, ORS 198, being challenged in a lawsuit by another district saying that no, ORS 222 prevails over 198, and therefore there's a conflict in the statute. And their belief is that since 222 was enacted after ORS 198, they're saying that that section, the two districts can't occupy the same territory, supersedes the older statute that allowed annexations to go with the cities. And I hope that makes sense.
I'm getting that.
the reason we're involved in this is not we're not taking sides in this dispute between Klamath 1 and Klamath 4 or the city or the 911 district that's involved. That's not our issue. Neither is the representative. I don't think we're here saying one's right and one's wrong. What our concern is the statewide implications of this. And the concern that hundreds of annexations have been done under ORS 198, and our concern that if a judge happened to rule that the other statute actually prevailed, that we would have hundreds, if not a thousand annexations, it would all of a sudden be declared invalid and the difficulties that would cause. And frankly, we believe it was always the intent of the legislature that if a city was annexed in its entirety by a district, that when that city annexed, they took those services with them. and that's what we believe people expect, and that's what they think is going to happen. And so this bill just simply makes it absolutely clear that that, in fact, is what happens, notwithstanding any other statute.
Madam Chair, I might also add that the conflict is not just at the state level, in that my son is a volunteer for Fire District 4, which is on the opposite side with Fire District Number 1 in this dispute. So there are lots of conflicts here.
I should also say that I also serve on the Palestine Rural Fire District Board, so I declare a conflict of interest as well.
Madam Chair, Burton Weist again. I've been advised Department of Revenue's here and apparently wants to comment.
Mr. Green, did you want to testify as well? Are you Rodney Green?
Yes.
Did you want to make a comment?
Just here to support.
Madam Chair, I'd like to introduce him as the chairman of Fire District 1's Board of Directors.
Sure.
And he's just making sure I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing today.
Yeah. I'm just here in support, Madam Chair, and don't really have any additional comments to make.
Give your name.
Rodney Green.
For the tape. Other questions for Mr. Green? Thank you very much. Okay, we will call the Department of Revenue. I don't know exactly who is here.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm members of the committee. My name is John Phillips of the Oregon Department of Revenue.
John, what was it again?
John Phillips.
Phillips, thank you.
I'm with the Property Tax Division, and just reading this bill, and I just wanted to make sure that it's clear. My reading of it is that when a city moves the boundary, that boundaries of the affected districts also move. I think that's the point of it. And for tax purposes, which is a different issue, there's the legal boundary change, which affects who services the district, but for tax purposes, the boundary wouldn't move unless they file those changes with the Department of Revenue and then eventually with the county assessors. So there is provision in law that requires that separately. So
what are the implications? Kind of take that a little farther. How would, if there is a lawsuit, how would that affect the lawsuit?
It wouldn't. It just affects who's taxed for the property. So if the districts make this change, then they'll still be required to file those boundary changes with the department. Nothing would change with respect to that requirement. I just want to be sure that was clear.
Okay. Do you have, maybe you can't comment on this, but do you have an opinion, or do you know of an opinion between these two conflicting statutes? Which one tends to take priority?
No,
it's 198.
I do not have information on that. All
right. Questions for the department? Thank you very much. Okay, that completes our testimony. Was there anyone else on the testimony on this bill? Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3945. Our committee, we won't be going into work session on that bill today.
Madam Chair?
Representative.
Oh, is this something that the cities need to come talk to us about, or who else would be involved? I would think the LLC would be interested in this.
I don't know. I know they track these bills. I don't know. These are the only people that I've talked to.
We have Burton address that.
Okay. Burton?
A good lobbyist, I'm sure he's.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Corey. I spoke to the League of Oregon Cities, and they are obviously aware of the bill. We've discussed it with them, and their official position is they're neutral on the bill. They feel this is a special district issue, so to speak, and their official position is neutral on the bill. In fact, I expected them, Linda Ludwig, to be here this morning, but I talked to her yesterday.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
President Johnson.
Thank you. And I know we've closed the public hearing on this, but just for kind of the record here, as far as I'm concerned, any time I encounter the wording notwithstanding, it kind of runs a red flag up the pole for me. And I do appreciate not having a work session on it today, because I want to try to look at what the implications of notwithstanding are for this. So, thank you.
Okay, I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2698. And the staff is passing out the Dash 2 amendment.
Thank you.
And the bill extends the temporary schedule for monthly hazardous waste management fees to January 2nd, 2004. It repeals the temporary fee schedule, declares emergency. This is our second hearing on this bill. So, Mr.
Is this the committee bill?
Oh, that's right. We adopted this as the committee bill. Dave.
Thank you, Madam Chair. All right, with you, Mr. Danko from DEQ will join us. We'll do it a little quicker for you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Barrows with Chemical Waste Management of the Northwest. This company is the company that owns and operates the hazardous waste disposal facility at Arlington. There are two facilities in Arlington owned by Waste Management. One is the Columbia Ridge Solid Waste Landfill that takes most of Portland's garbage, and the other one, the older facility, is the one I represent, which is the hazardous waste facility. That facility has been in existence for more than 25 years. And it is the only one in Oregon and Washington available to the public, to public companies, called a public facility. In 1985, the legislature imposed a disposal fee on hazardous waste coming into that facility of $10 a ton. And over time, that fee worked its way up to $30 a ton, and that was fine. It was a way to help pay for the hazard and solid waste program at the Department of Environmental Quality, and it was pretty much a level playing field. There is a facility in Boise, our nearest competitor, and their fees were comparable. They were, in fact, as we went into the 95 sessions, both facilities were at $30 a ton for all wastes, all waste streams, hazardous waste streams. In 1995, the Idaho legislature, at the request of the facility in Boise, created a variety of different fees for different kinds of hazardous waste streams. And in a response to that, in order to keep our facility competitive for the companies in Oregon and the Northwest, the Oregon legislature adopted for 2 years a comparable fee structure. And one of the reasons is, as the committee may recall, when Chair Close brought this bill to you at our request, that we had to hold the bill until Idaho legislature went home to make sure that they didn't do any adjustments of their fees. We have passed similar legislation in conjunction with DEQ. We always sit down and negotiate with them ahead of time, make sure that they're comfortable with what we're talking about. They have input. We have input. We work it out. And that's where we bring you today, Madam Chair, is a bill. The Dash 2 amendments are the agreed upon new structure of fees. It would go out for another 2 years. And then we'll come back to the 03 committee and legislature after Idaho goes home and see if they've done anything mischievous again. And
the war in the West.
The war in the West. And it's a very, you know, it's just we need to be reactive. And for that, there's sometimes advantages in having a longer legislative session than someone else's ending second. So that's the purpose of this bill. We can go through each of the amendments, each of the fees. Some of the freshmen may remember. I've done some. I did some briefings before the session started at the request of the chief clerk of the House of members, and I always said you're going to learn a lot of about a lot of topics you've never thought before, like hazardous waste disposal fees. And I could go on for hours, but normally I don't. And this is the bill to which I was referring in those freshman briefings. It's a complicated, detailed subject. Again, we bring it to you with agreement between my client and the Department of Environmental Quality, and we urge its adoption. If the bill does not get signed into law, then we revert back to $30 a ton, and it makes our facility totally uncompetitive with Idaho, and the facility would have to close.
Where did you say the facility was again? Our facility?
In Arlington. It's a little south west of Arlington.
I have a question.
How many jobs are involved if a plant like that were to close?
Approximately 50, Madam Chair, approximately 50 family wage paying jobs. It's Waste Management is the employer at the north end of Gillum County. Between the two facilities, the solid waste and the hazardous waste, it's the employer.
Okay, questions?
Representative Sephora. Thank you. So what you're saying is that when we pass this bill, we will be at the same fee structure as Idaho or comparative?
Madam Chair, Representative Kefouri, thank you for asking that question. I didn't cover that. Some of our fees are a little higher. Some of them are a little different, but some of them are a little higher, have been over this period of time from 95 through today, than Idaho's, simply because we have a transportation advantage from the Portland-Seattle area that allows us to have a higher hazardous waste disposal fee, approximately the same gate fee, in other words, the part that the company charges, comparable to Boise, and still be competitive. So they're a little higher than Idaho.
Okay. So what happened otherwise is that people would, or companies would then take their...
They'd drive
all the way to Idaho and...
Madam Chair, Representative Kefouri, that's exactly what happened. They just go sail in Wright Pine, Arlington on I-84.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative
Monica
Anderson, how far is it?
Madam Chair, Representative
Monica
Anderson.
From Arlington to the Idaho site. Is it several hundred miles?
Yes, okay. I'd say
that's
two or 300 miles. 200 miles.
Thank you.
Yes.
Further questions?
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality, and I just want to go on the record as supporting this bill and saying how cooperative we work with the company on this issue of recession, and hopefully that'll continue.
Can you just explain to us, the amendment talks about waste complying with any applicable land disposal requirements, and then there's a section on liquid waste. Can you just comment on the types of waste and how this applies?
Madam Chair, there are several different types of hazardous waste, and the waste disposal restrictions are addressed in federal law, which the state has adopted. And so when you talk about land disposal restrictions, some waste cannot be disposed of unless they're treated to a certain standard. And so that's what that talks about. And there are four key categories. And like Dave said, we fine-tune the fee structure to match the company's business, where the waste is coming from, and what the company has to do to that waste to legally dispose it. That's why the details on the fee categories are very important to the company.
And the liquid waste, can you just explain us what that is exactly?
Madam Chair, I believe that liquid waste comes from the high-tech industry in the Seattle area, and it's required to be managed as a hazardous waste, and this company has actually put in a special process to manage that waste for, I believe, it's Boeing coming out of Seattle.
Questions for Bob? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam.
Oh, Representative Jensen, excuse me.
Yes, just I think for Mr. Barrows, I'm sure you heard my red flag in the previous bill, and we've got a notwithstanding you've added in here too, so I will be in need of looking a little at exactly what that rather encompassing word entails.
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, passing the buck as rapidly as I can. This is actually language that Mr. Danko requested, and so if I could ask your permission and the chair's permission, perhaps Mr. Danko can answer that, respond to that question.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, I'm not going to pass the buck to the company's attorney, John Higginson, so I may want to help me out here if I get over my head. What Don and I discovered in going through this again this time, and like I said, we really look at the details of the bill, what the company wants to do, and make sure we have all the wording right. We've identified some language in the existing law that says a fee is only charged on waste disposed of at the facility. Well, we had understood, and the company agreed, that if the company brings in waste, treats it, manages it, but it doesn't actually get disposed, we believe that that waste should still be charged a fee, and the fee would be in the $15 category. But the language of the law, if someone wanted to really go after it, someone could argue that the language says, even though the company treats it, the language says it has to be disposed of. So Don, the attorney, came up with the language that says, notwithstanding that other language that says the waste has to be disposed of to be charged the fee, if the company treats it there, then this fee applies. That's why it was necessary to put in the notwithstanding in this instance.
And, Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, it was carefully crafted to apply to only that one subsection of the current law, and notwithstanding any other provision of law, which I think makes a lot of people nervous, because then you got to go read the whole statutes. This is very surgical, and we did agree that even though we don't dispose of it at that facility, it certainly is appropriate for that fee to be charged.
That was in the current statute, was it not? You're not adding those words because they're not in bold. Is that correct?
No, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I'm on page 2.
I'm sorry.
Line 20.
I see the book on there. Okay.
465.375 sub 1, Madam Chair, is the section to which Mr. Denker referred.
I beg your pardon, Madam Chair. I didn't specify or clarify.
There's another one of those.
Yes.
Okay. Further questions on that?
You can get the notwithstanding change regardless.
Irregardless. I don't know if anybody can spell that, actually. Okay. Seeing no further questions, thank you very much. Did the gentleman in the back wish to come forward and testify?
Madam Chair.
Representative Jensen.
Would it be inappropriate to ask Brendan to comment on this?
If you would like to. Brendan, would you come forward on this amendment and explain to us, I think we need to talk about ORS 465.375 in the dash 2. Section 1.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Brendan.
For the record, Brendan McCarthy with Legislative Counsel's Office. The notwithstanding language, I would agree, is carefully crafted to specifically apply to not only just 465.375 sub 1, but a particular element of 465.375 sub 1. And so it is narrowly drafted as possible. In fact, the first iteration of this amendment, I had shortened that to 365 sub 1, and I was then informed that we didn't want to notwithstand that whole subsection. We actually only wanted to withstand or notwithstand one particular requirement of this subsection.
Representative Jensen, does that clarify?
Yes, I think so, but you said we didn't want to notwithstand, so we narrowed it to just the sub 1 or some parts of sub 1.
Representative Jensen, that's right, just some parts of sub 1. There is a filing requirement, I believe, and another requirement in that subsection, memory serves, in addition to the fee requirement.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions?
No.
Thank you very much. Okay, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2698, and I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2698.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cruz.
I move the dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2698.
Representative Cruz has moved the dash 2 amendment into House Bill 2698. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cruz.
I move House Bill 2698 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz has moved House Bill 2698 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Pass is excused.
Representative
Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Aye.
Representative King?
Aye.
Representative Cruz?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Longstanding?
Aye.
Representative Morgan?
Aye.
Chair Close?
Both sides, motion carries. Representative Lee, would you carry this bill?
Sure, I was just going to suggest maybe it be on the consent agenda, but I'd be glad to carry it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3455 and have the staff read this summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3455 allows the Director of Agriculture to determine and declare existence of a weed control emergency, allows the State Department of Ag to request local government remedial efforts, allows department to require owners and occupants of private land to undertake remedial efforts, local government effort is absent, allows the department with consent of the governing body of county to undertake remedial efforts on county-owned and private lands upon owner-occupant noncompliance. It permits the recovery of remedial effort costs for private land donors.
Clarify, this is House Bill 3455, public hearing. We're calling forward Mike Lee. Okay, we will stand at ease for a moment.
Are there any notwithstandings in this Representative Jensen bill? I'm checking very carefully.
Well, I would hope you would, Representative Kefouri. I would be chagrined to find any new notwithstandings in a bill that had my name on it after the testimony on the last bill that we had.
I think we're in a notwithstanding free zone.
Yes.
Very careful.
Hazardous. Did you want to present?
No, I think that Mike will be. I will make some comments when we get there.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Mike Dewey, Representative Oregon Wheat Growers League. I'm not going to bore you with facts and figures about problems with weeds throughout the state of Oregon and this country, and it relates to problems with production of agricultural crops, livestock, and the like. We appreciate that Representative Jensen has introduced a bill of this magnitude. It is a serious bill in the sense that it helps to address some problems that we have in this state and to seriously address those problems. Now let me say that it would not surprise me that there will be those that are opposed to the bill because they are concerned about a provision that would allow the Department of Agriculture to have access to private property to if a landowner didn't take care of the invasive weeds, noxious weeds, then they could do that. They'd have to notify them first and then later bill them for that work. And I'm sure that provides some angst to people in terms of what will the Department of Agriculture do, what kind of rules will they have, will the cost be excessive, those kinds of things. The Oregon Wheat Growers League likes the concept of the bill. I'm not sure if the entire ag community is there at this point in time. Mr. Tess said to me, I may not be able to support this bill, and I suspect from the Farm Bureau perspective because of that provision. It may be others. Let me say that in part, I think we have taken this approach, and I'm being not necessarily 100% supportive here. I think we have to have some discussions within the industry. We've had it. I don't think we've gotten as serious as we need to be on this. We've talked about this, and we've talked about it, and we said it's a problem, but and I can take part of the blame here, that we always come back and say we need more money, but we haven't addressed some of the problems over here. But let me say that the counties don't necessarily have the money to do this. The Department of Agriculture, we're always trying to get more money for the Department of Agriculture. And there is a proposal to set up an invasive
weed council that we think is a good idea to address these kind of things and really get down to seeing if we can, they can be a catalyst here to help people come along. Mm-hmm. So we think it's important to have the conversation. And it might be important for this committee to say to us, you need to have this conversation, or don't continue to come back to us with these bills because you really don't want us to do anything with them anyway. So I've been kind of maybe talking too much about this and saying that we like the concept. I'm sure some of our members are going to say, why are you testifying for a bill that allows the Department of Agriculture, this big massive agency, I don't believe it's a big massive agency, to come on our land? And we're saying we have to do something. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I wish I could say that you know, this is the vehicle right now because I don't think we're there. I do want to thank the good representative for having the discussion for us.
Mike, can you just tell us just briefly for the wheat growers, how serious of a problem is this for them?
Well, I don't have, I mean, the department, and they have their folks, but you know, we have, when I go to the meetings, there's always a discussion about weeds and the concern they have for certain types of weeds or noxious weeds. And it's not only, it's within our waterways, too, that we have problems. And we've been trying to address that through the Department of Agriculture. I can just say that, you know, obviously I'm not growing wheat, but the wheat growers in meetings tell me that it's a serious problem. And when we talk about priorities in terms of funding, the first is usually research and extension at Oregon State University, very important to us. Second is dollars at the Department of Ag for weed control strategies. So that's, I guess, pretty important.
Can you tell me, also, I have 2 acres in the Willamette Valley, and I've always wondered what the local ordinances are. You know, if the surrounding neighbors don't keep their grass down, obviously that affects your property pretty seriously. What are the local ordinances?
Madam Chair, it would probably be best to have the Department of Ag address that, and I know they're here because I'm not sure. I think it varies from area to area. You do have weed control districts and the like where farmers get together to make sure that they have some sort of mechanism. You have counties that spend a lot more money on weed control than others. There have been cutbacks. So in your area, I couldn't tell. We do have pictures of your area, though, and we took those, and we're sorry to say that it doesn't look very good.
Actually, no,
and Representative Cruz's farm.
We have a pretty farm.
Representative Cruz has a question.
A couple more comments and maybe concerns. I don't know. Obviously, weeds are a very serious problem, having survived the infestation of tansy in southern Oregon and the incredible measures we had to go through to get a handle on that. And there is obviously really a problem, especially if you get out into rangeland and stuff like that, where, you know, if somebody doesn't control, if your neighbor's got a patch of star thistle, and then not a hell of a lot you can do to keep it from spreading. We know that. By the same token, you know, we've had county weed control districts for a long period of time that are now woefully underfunded and unable to do the job. And so I see a conflict here as to where the best bang for the buck should be. I do think there's probably compelling reasons in the case of an outbreak to be able to go on to eradicate a patch of whatever it is. But I guess I'm also maybe concerned about what the rules would look like here as far as what, you know, at what level does it become a weed epidemic, more or less? You know, Representative Kefauri asked me what a definition of a weed was. Of course, noxious weeds are included on a list, so that's a fairly defined universe. But I guess I have some concerns over process more than anything here, and also where the true level of authority should be.
Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm concerned about the farmer's thought that perhaps this would be invasive because in many counties, soil and water districts are the weed control board and their farmers made up of, the board is made up of farmers. I'm not sure why that would be unfriendly, and it would seem that protecting other farmers from invasive weeds would be a protection for the farmers who need that protection. Maybe others will testify on that, but it's hard to see it as being a downside for agriculture.
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, I think to a degree what you have happening is I'm taking care of my situation, therefore I don't want anybody coming on my property, so we don't need anything. But then you have somebody who isn't, and you start to see something. You didn't have these weeds, and you're wondering where they're coming from, and you have an idea. And then you start to think about, gee, wouldn't it be nice for somebody to get ahead of the curve? That's why, in part, the whatever it's the invasive weed council, if there is a proposal out there, I think that's important because that gets stakeholders together to have this conversation on a regular basis. Representative Cruz, you're right. What are the rules going to look like? And maybe we have the you know, cart before the horse, and the department could say, well, here's what we would do so that people have a better understanding of they're only going to do it when it is, we'll say, an emergency. There's something imminent. That conversation with Woody Debris yesterday, but something like that, as opposed to willy-dilly, we can come on your property when we find one or two weeds. I might just add one other comment, and that is that there's always a concern and for agriculture because of the price of chemicals and with natural gas going up and so forth. You know, we have a concern about, you know, how much it costs us to spray, and we do have to spray these to kill the noxious weeds. It just seems to me that if we can get a handle on this and we're more proactive, we're going to have less chemicals, and that's best for everybody, you know, neighbors and the like, and that's where we're trying to be.
Madam Chair.
Representative Jensen.
Yeah, if I might, that's not a question but a comment, since it is my name that's on the, and I think Mr. Dewey has, you know, really brought forth the issues, and we'll hear, I'm sure, more about some of those issues, but. I think it's appropriate to say that we have a weed epidemic in some portions of the state. The all-star thistle that Representative Cruz was mentioning is at epidemic proportions in portions of northeastern Oregon, and that so we, you know, we've got a problem somehow or another. We need to try to get a hold of. And I think the letters, and I get a lot of letters on this, but the letters from the district that I get are probably illustrative of the dilemma that we face. A letter from one very good liberal Eastern Oregon rancher farmer type, says, "What in the are you doing? Coming onto my, threatening to come onto my land to spray for." Weeds on my land, and another equally liberal Eastern Oregon farmer, rancher type says, "God, it's about time," sort of thing. So I think it points, that we've got an issue here, and we have a problem with how are we going to deal with it. And I do appreciate Mike bringing the issue to me. It's my understanding that almost this exact bill was before the 99 session of the legislature, I think introduced by the Department of Agriculture at that time. And so it's something we've been aware of, and I think it's something we do need to get a handle on. Exactly how we do it needs to be worked out, I think.
Madam Chair, a question for Representative Jensen. So basically, Representative, you're telling me that two liberal farmers in Eastern Oregon are on different sides of the issue.
That's right. Okay. And there are two of them.
Well, yeah. Can't be any more than that, I'm sure.
I can think about who they are.
Thank you very much.
I had a question.
Representative King had a question. Excuse me.
The
You mentioned the chemicals. I could foresee that, somebody might have an organic farm or, might not want chemicals sprayed. If this bill gets amended, you might want to take into consideration how you deal with a circumstance where someone does have a, a no-spray requirement, for their property. I see that, subsequently somebody could be billed and, have a lien filed against their property, so that if someone, wanted to forestall spraying, that they would also, be aware that they would probably have a higher cost resolution and that they would ultimately face responsibility for that.
Representative Coast and Representative King, you're exactly right. This would be, I think, have to be dealt with in the rule for people to understand that there would be a different strategy in this operation to take care of the problem.
And in response to Representative King, so there are certain crops that we have in Eastern Oregon that, not into organic sort of thing, but certain crops that preclude some of the sprays that we might use. And so, it's a pretty delicate type of game that we're playing here with it. And I would be the first one to admit that and the need to be very cautious.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll call Glenn Stonebrink of the Cattlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Glenn Stonebrink with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I think Representative Jensen hit it on the head when he said it's a dilemma. I was here 2 years ago when we dealt with House Bill 2118. And we had some counties that thought this would be a great idea, and some counties said, no way. As you understand, that in some counties, they do have a weed control district, and they do pay for that out of their county. Some counties just can't seem to get it done. So that's where the dilemma is. From that bill, we call it the 2118 work group, I guess, that was to get a handle on, we wanted to get an inventory. We wanted to find out what is the situation throughout the state, because we really didn't know. From my old home county of Lowell County, I could speak for it, but I couldn't speak for Douglas County or Jackson County. And so we asked for a work group to work on this during the interim. We didn't, as far as I know, there's been no bill proposed from that work group to solve the dilemma. And this bill is very much like 2118 last session. A couple things I just wanted to touch on rather quickly. On line 9, there is the term invader species. And to some, and as you tend to read the general concept of this bill, that probably means a noxious weed, but in some circles, invader species are not noxious weeds. They're a species that was non-native, that someone might determine has to be eradicated simply because they didn't want it there. It wasn't a native species. So I'm concerned sometimes about those kinds of that kind of terminology. Basically, in a nutshell, what some of our counties that do have good weed control districts say, just send us money, because they've been paying the bill. Their citizens of their counties have been paying the bill. Other counties are not. And what we need is some equity somehow to control this. One thing that I think Representative Cruz talked about, the rangeland issue, that I also just like to bring up is that on rangeland, we have private rangelands, and we have some state rangeland, quite a bit in fact, and we have a lot of federal rangeland. Now, if you go onto federal lands and you try to control a noxious weed, you have a problem, because they're not going to let you, in most cases, use a pesticide. They won't let you use a chemical. And yet that is a huge problem, and it doesn't just stay on federal lands, of course. It comes back onto the private lands. So it's almost like some of our people have said, we need to have some night raiders that come in with the black helicopters and black suits with a chemical tank just to get rid of something that is totally bad to everything. I mean, it's like you have to commit a crime to do what's right, but we're not doing that. It's just a comment.
Representative Jensen.
Could we possibly borrow the EPA's stealth choppers to do this?
Representative Jensen, yes, you have my permission.
Thank you.
All the White House.
Right now, we would not, as written, work this bill. I would like to see it get very serious, though, between now and the next session, to come up with a solution, because it is a problem that's not going away by itself.
Glenn, can you tell us, what is the role of the county extension agents? Do they get involved in this at all?
County extension agents are a tremendous asset, because they do have the knowledge of weeds. We use them, back in my home county, we use them all the time, sometimes for weed identification. And then they could also tell us what, not only what it would look like, but what chemical we could use to eradicate. And they're very much involved with the county weed board for giving that tremendous advice.
Question. Thank you very much. Pete Test, Farm Bureau.
Good morning, Chairman Close, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pete Test, Associate Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. And I appreciate this opportunity to give a few comments on this particular bill. As several people have said, this is pretty much mimicked from a bill that was here last session, and there was a lot of concern and complex arguments from out on the countryside related to the bill and giving the Department of Agriculture powers beyond what local people felt they should have, and even to the point where some counties said we're doing our job ourselves, not even with a district, or what do we need to do that for? And that doesn't make the problem any less, and this discussion probably should be here again, because we didn't see any results from last year's discussion within the industry and outside, for that matter. I think there is a problem with emergency weed invasion. The reality is you can't eradicate weeds except in some very, very difficult and prime cases. And that means when you've got one small invasion in one place that you can really go in and do a job on, and that has to be early. Most of the weeds we're dealing with now are beyond any form of hope of eradication. At best, management and control is all we can hope for. But when we have that opportunity to actually eliminate one, it's something we have to take advantage of. In the past, with my experience as a county extension agent in Grant County, we did have one or two cases where we found extra money to try and do that. We were successful in one case. We were sorely not successful in another that was before I was there. Now each county over there has their own weed, and Dalmatian Totifax is Grant County's weed, because it started with 3 acres, and now it's all over the eastern Oregon. So we didn't do a good job of eradicating when it was first there. Of course, there's a lot of things we didn't know. So there is an issue out there that has to be dealt with. But I think Glenn hit the other part of the issue, at least in eastern Oregon, and it's probably two. One, rangelands, a lot of that country that people are dealing with are $25 an acre land. And the cost of herbicides, chemical, and even the management for some of these weed species is 3 or 4 times the value of the land. The landowner is in a catch-22. I lose my land totally, or I lose it because I can't afford to finance the weed control. He's kind of in a catch-22, and if there's a situation where he's going to have a lien on his property for somebody else doing it, it's still going to cost him. Now, many of the counties and many of the weed districts we set up have the ability to do exactly what they're allowing the Department of Agriculture to do in this bill. The main reason they don't do it is, again, what Glenn mentioned, particularly in eastern Oregon, I'm sure in parts of western Oregon, if you've got a landowner that sits next to federal land and the weed's coming from the federal land, he says, how can you hold me? The problem's not mine, it's there. If we work on it together, we can solve it. This does not get the federal government involved at all. They will not use the herbicides. It's like pulling teeth to get them to use herbicides. I keep thinking of the invasion of star thistle in Hell's Canyon, where the federal government seeded with uncertified seed and seeded yellow star thistle into the wilderness area and said, oh, my gosh, in the first year they should have really gone back and used herbicides, but they didn't. We're going to remove it by hand. Well, now we've got yellow star thistle all over the countryside there. It was planted by the federal government. But, again, they wouldn't use – the only real chance they had was to use herbicides the first round before there was a seed source. And they couldn't use them. I mean, so, you know.
This is the same government that's asking us to be good stewards of the land?
Of course, Representative Close, Chair Close, Representative Jensen, yes. So
they intentionally
bullied,
is that what you're saying?
Well, let's put it this way. They used uncertified seed rather than clean seed because it was cheaper. Of course, you know how we do. It's cheaper is always better. And planted it and basically created a problem. And then did not use the appropriate technical advantages we had to try and stop it from going beyond where it is. People make mistakes. But generally, the problem is that with the federal government not doing anything, the counties do not feel secure in forcing landowners adjoining to do something. And I think that's a legitimate position to be in. And so why would the state want to do anything different? So there's a lot of, you know, I don't want to be against this bill. I'm not against the concept. I'm against the way the bill is written, and I think we do have to go beyond a quick bill. We have to really sit down and with some serious thought. Weeds are such a big problem we can't get our arms around. I mean, it's so damaging and so expensive and so few ways to do it that it's everybody agrees, but nobody really wants to roll up their sleeves because the sleeves aren't long enough to really do the job. It's kind of a little knit at a time, and somehow we have to get into a position where we can take a look at this with a new idea and see how we can get the local people involved and get some sort of a start on solving the problem.
Now, Pete, when the county agents go out, first I'd like to know exactly where their money comes from. I know they used to be federally funded, the extension agents. Is this a voluntary program when they go out to talk to the landowner?
Representative Close, generally, at least, and I'm not sure it's changed. Occasionally, there can be some grant money or stuff where they help, but generally, it was just considered part of the job when I was there. Weed control was an issue. That was what the county was dealing with. People work with soil and water districts. People work with weed control districts, and people work with county agents, and sometimes they won't necessarily work with the same person. There's all a trust issue there. But we were usually looked upon as somebody to identify weeds when people found a problem, get the ID, and then work with the person to solve the problem, be it through the weed district or all by himself. Occasionally it meant we actually went out, and more than once I went out, more often than not, for poisonous plants, trying to figure out why the critters died, crawling around trying to figure out what they ate that did them in. But like saying a weed, I guess, is something as a plant that's where somebody doesn't want it. Noxious weeds are something else, and poisonous plants are even worse. But it's generally just considered with the job when you're on the east side, particularly on the west side, in a natural resource or livestock or agronomy agent capacity. And we just look at it as most of the agents, it's a major problem. It hurts the county. It hurts the county's agriculture. And our job is and the agent's jobs was to try and help solve the problem and help the people do it. I know very few agents that aren't in some way involved, particularly in Eastern Oregon, with the weed issue. Many of them are people that created the weed districts in their county. They were the ones that were kind of one of the main instigators to try and push for weed district with soil water districts and such. So they're in it, but it's part of the job.
Partially funded. I know it comes through OSU and their
extension is partially funded with county, state, and federal money. It's the epitome of bureaucratic funding. It's got a little from everybody. And the counties and what the agent can do, a lot has to do with operating funds. And obviously, if you don't do what the counties like to see you do, then the commission is not too happy to fund your budget. So if one of the things the counties want you to do is to help work with the weed program, that they can make that known by not giving you the budget. But there's usually no extra money. It just comes along with the turf. And of course, like I say, the funding through OSU, which we're trying to get funds, more funds right now, is the state and the counties have their match, and then the federal government has a certain portion of it. And it's been a long time since I've looked, but it's split up three or four ways. But occasionally counties do go for budgets, do go for grants, and agents usually might be involved in that process.
Thank you. Questions for Pete? Thank you very much. Madam.
Thank you.
Representative Monica.
We're still in public hearing, aren't we?
We are. Was there anyone else who wanted to testify on this bill? I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3455.
Madam Chair, I request that we suspend the rules to allow Mark Hass to vote on House Bill 2698, House Bill 3187, and House Bill 3924.
Representative Monis Anderson requests permission to suspend the rules so that Representative Hass can vote on the three bills, 2698, 3187, 3924. It will not change the outcome. Is there anybody opposed to that? Okay. Anything? Did you go ahead? We suspend the rules. Representative Hass, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye.
And all three.
Aye, aye, aye.
Aye, aye.
Wanted to hear you say it. Thank you.
Aye, 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 aye.
And the clerk will make note of that. Three aye votes. Okay, committee, this completes our work today. I did want to remind you of the field trip. We are leaving at 2:15. Representative King has graciously allowed, said that he will transport us up there. And he will be leaving, he will be loading at 2 p.m. on the state side of the Capitol, center entrance. We'll try to have you back by 5 o'clock. So anybody that can join us, we are going to the Oregon Golf Club to see their water treatment facility. Is there anything else for the committee?
Madam Chair, I could just make a few comments. The committee assistant has mentioned that she's had a hard time hearing some of the members on the tape when people lean back and do this and talk. You don't have to lean forward, but if you just upright. And also, she's catching some personal conversations that you may not want on the record. Nothing inappropriate, but...
yeah, there are some good conversations. So.
Yeah. I'm going to go back and look at your...
Dang, just be aware. He's doing today, anyway.
I just want to say I take back everything that I said.
Except the three eyes. Okay, well, Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, I don't know what your intention will be on House Bill 3455, and I suspect it will be very difficult to, you know, move this bill as it is. However, you know, if we decide not to do anything as such with it, I'd like to ask that the chair really put some pressure on the stakeholder groups to do something during the interim to come back to the next legislative session with something that is... going to be acceptable to the stakeholder groups to, in order to be able to deal with this, because I do think weeds are a very difficult problem for us out there, and we do have people coming before this and other committees complaining about various and sundry types of activity that takes money out of the farmers' ranchers' pockets. We have concerns about game, about predators, et cetera, sort of thing. And weeds are, in fact, a predator, too, in the sense that they take land out of production or reduce the production of, you know, land. So I'd like to see the people who are involved here bring us something that represents an effort to have a solution on this, even though this may not be the vehicle.
Representative Jensen, it is my intent to have a hearing next week on the invasive species council that the department has asked for.
Okay.
And my feeling is that that group would be the forerunner to try to work on this problem. I think this particular bill is a little punitive for the landowners, but we will have more discussion next week.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I think it's something we need to add for discussion.
Seeing no further comments, we are...